CTV.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I know the suspense has been killing you. The plural of dominatrix is dominatrices. Yes, dominatrices. That is the preferred plural. However, it is also proper to say dominatrixes with the X. Glad to settle that for you. I'm settled in my own mind because I wasn't exactly sure. Welcome to MZTV. I'm Martin Zender. I broadcast from my car in an alley in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, heralding the grace of God and many little tributaries. I am the author of Divine Principles of Sexual Attraction. I used a dollar bill for my bookmark here. Yeah, I slipped a dollar in. The bookmark I wrote, Divine Principles of Sexual Attraction, available now at martinzender.com, along with Eve Raised and Beyond Politics. Eve Raised and Divine Principles of Sexual Attraction will answer many of the perplexing questions that you have had about the power dynamic between men and women. Why is it so strong? Now, this show is going to be extremely sexual, so I will warn anyone ahead of time that if you don't want to get that into it, why, you can just turn this off, turn the volume down, you just watch me talk, or whatever. I warned you ahead of time. So if you get upset with someone relating God, which is what I do down the line, this is the beauty of what I do. I relate God to sexuality. This never happened before in my religious past or in your religious past. Sex was this taboo topic over here, and you had your God life, and then you had your other life, your real life, your work life, your sex life, or whatever. But what does our apostle say? To live is Christ. So anything that touches our life, anything involved with living, especially something as powerful as sexual attraction, which I've been telling you is a parable of the attraction of humanity toward God, the parable being the attraction of a man toward a woman, anything as powerful as that, you can better believe that it's of God and it's of Christ. I've spoken before of the sexual sins. You can find them in Leviticus chapter 20. You will find far fewer sexual sins in Leviticus than you will in Christianity. Yes, Christianity is very hung up on this topic. And actually, they might look at my shows here and say, that Zender, he's sexually obsessed. No. They are sexually obsessed because they can't get over somebody talking about or mentioning sex. So who is the sexually obsessed? So I'm going to dive deep today. I might have to do one more show. We'll see how much I can get in here. Today I'm going to talk about dominatrices. I'm going to talk about porn. And I am going to talk about fetishes. Ready? 4, 3, 2, 1. Great comment on yesterday's show on the topic of porn. And this guy said, and I totally agree with him. I don't know if I've ever said this, but this guy already knew it. The appeal of porn to men is not primarily in the flesh or in the beauty of the female form. I know that sounds shocking. But what I'm about to say, I believe is true for most men. Not that I know anything about this. I just read about it. And I looked at comments about it. I thought, that's interesting. I think that's true. Is that all the women on the porn sites are happy. They're smiling. They're accepting pleasure. Like, they're not rolling their eyes. They don't have a problem with it. They seem to be enjoying it. They might all be acting. I don't know. If so, then they're good actresses. And for some reason, I need to say this on the topic of porn. I am not in any way, by mentioning pornography, that is, pornography, our definition is anything that would excite the sexual senses. I am not in any way excusing or promoting sex trafficking, sex slavery. Please, absolutely not. There's a dark side to every industry, not just the porn industry. There's a dark side to anything you can think of. The meatpacking industry, there's a dark side to it. People who sell alcohol, there's a dark side to it. The alcohol is not a sin in itself. The meat is not a sin in itself. And the sex and the women who seem to be enjoying it, it's not a sin in itself. And it is not true, by the way, it is not true that all material on the internet that is designed to stimulate the senses in a sexual way, that all of it is by default, they're all just sex slaves. They've all been trafficked. They're all being forced to do these things. Absolutely not true. But like anything else, you must be discerning. A guy at a conference one time raised his hand and said, "Martin, I'm having trouble with internet porn." I said, "Have you tried rebooting your modem?" The comment was so true, I think. And I know some of the frustration from a lot of men I have heard is that men are afraid to, I think, share their innermost sexual being with their significant other or with women in general, because women in this day and age, I don't think it's always been this way. No, in fact, I know it hasn't always been this way, but Christianity has ruined sexuality. They have made it into a sin. They have made it into something that just God allows for. God allows it. Not that God created it. Not that God invented it. Not that God wants it to be enjoyed. Not that God has a multifarious sexual world that has so many different intricacies and colors and hues and sparkles. No. God just, I gotta let this happen because people need to reproduce. So, man, poor God, he just closed his eyes and, you know, let it come in the back door. Satan invented it, of course, and God just like allowed it, and now he's putting up with it, and he can't wait to get rid of it. Folks, this is absolutely false. But religion has ruined it for many people, and especially women, I think. I'm not saying this is not a, you know, whole cloth statement here, but I think that men just can't ignore that biological insistence. Women, they have strong sex drives, yes, but it's not as strong as the male sex drive. Big revelation here on MZTV. The male sex drive is stronger than the female sex drive. Well, of course, that fits the parable for one thing. It's consistent with the parable. God is not interested in equality. He is not interested in Adam being sufficient in himself, the complete human being. The man with both genders inside of him. No, God doesn't like that. He pulls Eve out from Adam, creates a longing, and the longing is from him to her. This is undeniable. He's the one, because I've said this before, I'm reviewing, he is the one who lost something. His part, his womb, the female parts of him were removed, and so he wakes up from this most sublime operation empty. But Eve is created whole. Nothing is removed from her. So she's more complete in herself. But Adam's like, I got this ache. I got this emptiness inside. He looks over there. Ooh, I think that's the answer to my emptiness. And he lunges for her hips. And the first woman, I feel sorry for her in her way. She's probably like, hey. Who is this? What is this creature lunging for my hips? And so Adam has to explain the whole thing to her. Hey, I've been here for a few months. I've been watching all the animals frolic around. The rhinoceros over here, and I'm watching the kangaroos, and they all have their partners, and they're all reproducing, and I got nothing here. And so, last thing I remember, I was just picking oranges over by the Gihon River, and next thing I know, I wake up with, this is weird. I feel funny, awful funny. Then I saw you, and I realized that you're the answer to my lack. Therefore, God says, a man shall leave his father and mother and cling to his wife. It never says that the woman clings to her husband, although that's nice when you do that. I recommend it. But the need to cling is a masculine need. It not says that the woman clings. The man, men are more clingy, right? We're clingy. Women aren't as clingy. But here's something for you. I hadn't planned on talking about this, but I talk about it in my book, Divine Principles of Sexual Attraction. Even in Genesis, it says, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and cling to his wife. Who was God's father? I mean, who was Adam's father? Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother. Well, we know Adam didn't have a mother or a father, but if you had to look at a figure in Adam's life pre-Eve who he would have to leave, it would be God. And so one of my contentions in this book is that, get ready for this, Eve for Adam becomes a proxy God. Yes, this also bolsters my conclusion that women in the male-female attraction scenario, women represent God because she becomes a proxy God. God leaves and the woman comes in. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother. Who did Adam leave? In a sense, he left God, or God left him, and now the woman becomes I'm not saying that the woman fulfills a man's need for God. I'm just saying that in the absence of the physical fellowship that God, that Adam had with God in the garden, God left after sin entered the earth. God went bye-bye, not to be seen anymore. But in his stead, he gave the man the woman. Now, God was still hanging around for a little while, of course, after the sin. But based on this verse, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, I think that is a pretty good proof text that Eve becomes, in a way, a proxy God. Sorry to put all that pressure on you ladies. But there you go. So it's the acceptance. It's the acceptance of a man's sexual passion. And I hope I've helped explain it to the women especially. There's nothing wrong with this guy. There's nothing wrong, but he's afraid. That's what I say. He's afraid to unburden his sexual soul for fear of being ridiculed, for being thought of as an animal or a pervert. And so men tend to keep to themselves. And it's the lack of communication between the sexes that has destroyed marriages. Destroyed marriages. It's of my opinion that if sex is good in a marriage, then the couple can survive other problems. People say, well, Martin, the number one reason for divorce is financial issues. I disagree. The number one reason for divorce is sexual issues. Because if things are going well in the bedroom, then you can handle all the other stuff. But if things are bad there, and if there's no communication there, if the man's afraid to talk to the woman about that, and if the woman thinks the man is a pervert about that, then you're not going to solve any other problems. And I told you the other day that Satan wants to destroy society, which he does. All he has to do is destroy the family. To destroy the family, he only has to destroy men and women. I should say husbands and wives. And to destroy husbands and wives, all he has to do is screw up sex. Make it a three-letter word. Pervert it. Make it seem wrong, make it seem evil, so that nobody's comfortable about talking about it. That's the beginning of the end. Men are afraid to tell their wives how much they need it. Because they get the classic eye roll. It's like, oh my God, here it comes again. Here it comes again. But I am eventually going to publish my book, Shaga, which tells women that testosterone, ladies, testosterone is your best friend. Yes, you can use this wonderful hormone to make your life wonderful. And the man's not going to be complaining either. So wait for that. I've been talking about this book for years. I know it's been written for 15 years. But Satan's a wily enemy, friends. And he will prevent these things. So it was 1966 And I was a 7-year-old kid, and I loved the series Batman. You know, the television series with Adam West and Burt Ward. And as an impressionable young boy, I will never forget the episode that introduced Catwoman. It's like, OMG. Here comes Julie Newmar with that whip and just sauntering into her lair. And attended by these cat dudes, right? That just held her hand and kissed her and just like, whatever you say, Catwoman. And I'm kind of rocked back. I'm a 7-year-old and I'm like, man, she's for me. Yeah, she's for me. So I thought, and I gotta say this, the writers of Batman, they didn't invent this. What is that about? What is it about any woman who ratchets up, and that's what Catwoman is. It's a ratcheting up of the sexual power that women have over men. Yes, I'm getting into the topic of dominatrixes. It's a ratcheting up of the power. Let's say you have a magnet and you have the positive pole over here and the negative pole over here. When you increase the power of the positive pole and increase the power of the negative pole, the magnet becomes stronger. It just builds up the tension. So if you take the power that women already have over men, and let's face it, women have great power in that they have the power to say yes or no in the sex department, right? Women have that power. Men, as far as I know, not one man has ever said no. But women say it all the time. That's the power they have. So we always, we have to please them. We have to find out what they want. We have to be nice. We have to do lots of things so that they'll say yes. That's generally how it works in a sexual relationship. There's some variance there. There's some variables. Not everybody's created the same. But so the woman is powerful anyway. And the man is weak anyway. Oh, there's a great saying concerning sex is that the stronger sex is the weaker sex because of the weakness of the stronger sex for the weaker sex. Did you get that? Yeah. The weaker sex, Julie Newmar, Catwoman, is actually the stronger sex because of the weakness of the stronger sex for the weaker sex. Did you notice that there's power and energy created? So the Catwoman character in Batman is an exaggeration of the power. It's just amped up. It's like, you're really tightening the screws there. And of course, I'm going to show you images now as I talk. Here's Julie Newmar, 1966. The villainous Catwoman and the writer of the episodes actually developed a very interesting sexual dynamic between Batman and Catwoman. In fact, there was, I think there was an episode, it's hard to believe this made television in 1966. Batman said, I feel a certain stirring beneath my bat belt. Yeah, I'll bet you do. I'll bet you do. So anyway, it's just a woman with amped up power, right? And then, of course, she's uber sexualized. Uber sexualized. Now we come to the topic of dominatrixes. I always found it fascinating that men, that there's a giant industry out there where men will pay women to do to them what the Roman soldiers did to Christ, short of crucifixion. There's this need inside a lot of men, whether they admit it or not, to actually, they want to suffer for the superior gender, for what they think is the superior gender. I totally understand that. It's the same reason that Jesus Christ came and suffered for the ecclesia. Remember that verse that says, "For the joy set before him, he endured the cross." So our Lord was suffering because of a greater glory, a greater thing. And I think it's a desire in some men to show their adoration of their dedication to, and their willingness to suffer for the opposite sex. It's like, if you can't beat them, join them. Or if you can't join them, let them beat you. And so men will pay women. You all know this, and you see it in popular culture, but people, it's even in Batman in 1966, you see that. She comes in here with a whip, and she's got these cat dudes attending to her. So it's there in 1966 in primetime television. It's just a little dose of it. But if you take that to further extremes, well, you know how it goes. But when I see what men pay for, it was so interesting to me that, oh my God, a lot of these things are what the Romans did to Christ. And when I came to understand that there was a correlation between God and Christ and humanity, and God, Christ, and women and humanity and men, I started to draw this conclusion. It's like, wow, there's a actual God reason behind men wanting to suffer for women in a controlled environment. Of course. And then I think back to the days of the Knights of the Round Table, where, you know, the men used to compete in jousting contests, and they'd whack each other with giant spiked balls just so they could impress the woman who's sitting on her throne watching the developments, watching the men fight to the death over them. Not to the death. They were games. And this that I'm describing to you with the dominatrices, this is a game also, and yet it's a microcosm. It's a power play is what it is. It's a power play. It's a demonstration of what men will do for women. That even if the women beat them, spit on them, slap them, whip them, they will adore them to the end. I see it with Christ. That no matter what they did to Christ, he was so dedicated to the ecclesia. And this had to be portrayed physically with Christ. Why couldn't Christ just say, I would do anything for you. No problem. I would do anything for you. It's like Christ goes to a whiteboard and just gives a presentation about all the things he would do. No, it has to be acted out. It has to be physical. And when we see the passion of the Christ, him on the cross, or him being scourged by the Romans, it's horrible. Slapped, mocked, humiliated. Men pay to be humiliated too. It's a billion-dollar industry. It's so interesting. And when we see the physicality of it, it's impressive. It's impressive. I contend to you that this physicality is being today reproduced in hidden chambers, hidden rooms all over the freaking world right now as I speak. Men are paying women hundreds of dollars to beat them, slap them, spit on them, whip them. Why? Why? It's because it's in... It's a display of the dedication under trial, under duress, to serve a greater being. And to me, it's so fascinating, so interesting. It's like a drink of whiskey. Yeah, I'm giving you strong drink now. But I'm, as far as I know, my friends, I'm the only person that's ever made the connection between that and God and Christ. And I have a short section about that in my book with an accompanying photograph, and I'm going to show you that now. Illustration on page 79 of Divine Principles of Sexual Attraction there. Yeah, like a woman in a black shiny corset. There it is. I always seem to get the waist hip ratio in there. I'm extremely impressed by that. I just can't get over that waist hip ratio. Absolutely unbelievable. I give more details about that in this book. So if you want more than what I just gave you, you're gonna have to find out. But how many people would in Christianity, that anything that they call kinky or anything that goes outside of the vanilla world of sex, they think it's sinful and it's wrong? And yet God's creation is so multifarious, it's so varied. Just look at the different species of animals. Somebody made a comment on the video the other day talking about women and how beautiful they are and all the different varieties of beauty. It's just, it's never ending. Never ending. In fact, I got to tell you this. When I was in Pennsylvania, and Nathan came up to me one day and said, Zender, have you ever heard of the Bikini Bridge? I said, what? The Bikini Bridge? Where is that? Is that in London somewhere? Is it over the Seine? Over the Thames? No, the Bikini Bridge. It's that when women in bikinis, when they lay down, there's the bikini forms a bridge, and the two sides of the woman's abdomen, which sink in if she's fit, the bikini forms a bridge over these hollow spots. I'm going to show you a photo of it. I'm going to show you an example of a bikini bridge right there. Yeah, those two little vacuum spaces, the dead spaces on either side of the abdominal muscles, that forms the bikini bridge. Look, folks, I found out with Nathan that there are whole websites, there are whole Pinterest pages dedicated to hundreds and thousands of pictures of the bikini bridge. It's like, what? Someone discovered yet another marvel of the female form. It's like there's no end to it. That's what I'm saying. There's no end to it. And so where Christianity would condemn anything apart from sex just for procreation, like the Amish, some sects of the Amish, or I've heard that some people, was it in the Middle Ages when you have those people who thought that anything physical was evil, they would, when a man and a woman would copulate, it was so evil to have any sexual feelings, it was so evil to do anything but sex for procreative purposes, they would put a hole in the sheet so that the, God forbid, the bodies would not touch each other and the man could just do that real quick. And okay, 9 months, see you later. Yeah. So what I'm telling you about here with this kind of thing, it's like Christianity condemns this stuff. Why? Because they're vanilla and they're boring and they're dull and they're uninteresting and they have no imagination and they think that God is unidimensional, that God is monochromatic, and God is not that way. Look at the different plants, the different trees, look under the sea, look at all the sea life. And are we to say that sex doesn't have all these different aspects, all these different little variances? Sex is like a mansion with 1,001 rooms that can be explored, and it's just so amazing to me. And I've just scratched the surface of it in this book. Holy Moses, I got more to say on this. What else was I going to talk about? Told you I would talk about dominatrices. I've done that. I told you I was going to talk about porn. Oh, fetishes. I lost my bookmark, but a fetish, what people call that, is just putting a sexual importance on an object, okay? But in the case of Solomon, which is he's my go-to guy here, it's not wrong. I think it's weird if there's a guy, say, who has a high heel shoe fetish, and he just goes to the store, buys a high heel shoe off the rack, takes it out of the box, and goes gaga over it. I think that's weird. But when the shoe is associated with a woman, and see, with me, it's always the woman, the whole woman, that's the start of everything. So then anything, then the woman is so powerful, so sexual, that anything that touches her body is then sanctified. Ooh, there's a spiritual truth there too. Anything that touched the temple was holy. Nothing profane was allowed to come into the temple. I think tomorrow I'm going to have to tell you how a woman's inner parts are parabolic, or I should say the temple is parabolic of that. The setup of the temple with the cherubim and the Holy of Holies. Yeah, I'm going to have to do that. I'm going to have to do that tomorrow, I think. But so anything that touches a woman, to me, is sanctified. Like her clothing, her necklace, her shoes, it all becomes holy ground, right? And if you remove a woman wears a glove, and let's say you remove the glove from the woman, sorry, that glove's now holy, okay? That glove's holy to me now, and I will kiss it I will take it back to my boudoir and imbibe of its wonders because it touched her. I'm not going to go to frickin' Walmart, buy a frickin' leather glove, and frickin' kiss it, okay? That's weird. But if it belongs to a woman with whom I am intimately acquainted or for whom I have a healthy desire for, then, well, all the rules change at that point, don't they now? Yeah, it's holy. Solomon, I'll close with this. Solomon says the same thing. Yeah, Solomon's with me on this. He goes crazy pretty much over her sandals. In my book, I'm quoting myself here, fetishism is the art of finding sexualness in things. Men become aroused, for instance, when they see a woman's high-heeled shoe. That's what I hear. I don't know. I just, whatever, you know, sure. This is completely natural. At least King Solomon thought it was. Listen to what the wise man says of his bride in Song of Songs, chapter 7, verse 1. Quote, how lovely are your sandaled footsteps, O princely daughter. That's from the Concordant version of the Old Testament. The NASB is stupendous here. It says, how beautiful are your feet in sandals. Ooh, in sandals. We got a fetishist here. Solomon, he loves her feet in sandals. Ah, yes. I got to ask you this before I give one more quote from Solomon. Have you ever heard of women stealing men's underwear? Have you ever heard of a woman stealing a man's underwear, taking it back to her boudoir? And no, I'm stopping there because it's sick. Okay, sorry. Have you ever heard of men stealing women's underwear? I think I have. Why is that? It's because it's imminently more fascinating. Why is that? Because that is the area, and that is the curtain, you might say. I'm going to get into this tomorrow. That hides the area. So it all comes back to Eden, ladies and gentlemen. The more you pursue it, the more you find that out. And I pursued it, and it goes back to Eden. Okay. Yes. Why is fetishism almost exclusively a male trait? Go back to Eden and Adam's initial infatuation with the physical. Remember, I said he looks at the differences. She's infatuated with her body because it's new. She is new. Her whole body is new. He knows everything before he takes the big nap. He knows everything on the horizon. He wakes up and there's something new. There's a new being on the horizon. That's why he sees her first as an object. He does, but she becomes a dear one to him. But he goes toward her because he knows that she's his completion. So anyway, and for her, it's not that way. Everything's new. Everything's new. She just wants to know why this creature's lunging for her hips. So he has to explain it to her, just like we all still have to explain it. I don't know why we still have to explain it, but we do. Why is fetishism almost exclusively a male trait? Go back to Eden and Adam's initial infatuation with the physical. Men love the physical woman so much that her essence for them spills over onto her things. Wow, I can't say it better myself. Oh wait, that was me. Okay, yeah, well, that's good. Yeah, her essence is so powerful, it spills over onto her things. I can't think of how to say it any better. That's why, it's true. So Solomon says it better in Song of Solomon, chapter 4, verse 9. You have made my heart beat faster, my bride. You have made my heart beat faster with a single glance of your eyes, with a single strand of your necklace. Oops, we got a fetishist here.